The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
On News Talk.
You're welcome back to The Hard Shoulder. Kieran Cuddihy with you until 7 o'clock this evening. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Susie Dent to the show. You will know her as the Queen of Countdown's Dictionary Corner for 30 years. Now you will know her as well from 8 out of 10, Cats Does Countdown, from her columns in newspapers, from her appearances on other TV shows, from our podcast, and from her books. Her latest book is In My Hand, An Emotional Dictionary, Real Words for How You Feel from Angst to Zwadder. Susie, you are very, very welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, Kieran. I am very well, thank you. Just as you were talking about my books, I was expecting a Jimmy Carr line about how many of them there are and how there usually is just a sleeping aid. That's pretty much what you said to me.
No, I wouldn't be so unkind. In fact, it's a great book. Before we talk about the content and some of the words in it, some of my favourites, I'm sure you have your favourites too. What's the genesis of it?
I think it was really the emotions that I think I myself was feeling during lockdown, and that obviously we were all suddenly talking about how we felt because we were so out of touch physically, weren't we? We weren't allowed to hug anyone, and figuratively we lost contact with people. And one of the triggers for me really was looking in the Oxford English Dictionary just one day, as I do, browsing through the dictionary, and I found the expression lonesome fret, which is defined, it's from centuries ago, and it's defined as a feeling uneasy from being on your own for too long. And I just thought, this is exactly what we need at the moment. And then I started to just, research a little bit more. I mean, I've collected lots of words for different emotions over the years because I am a word nerd and I just jot things down as I find them. But I also came across quite a lot of research about how if we can name an emotion, then we're better able to manage it, which I found fascinating.
Yeah, lonesome fret, it is here on page 200. Though interestingly, the word below it is love. And people might suspect that the book is going to be full of words they've never heard of. But it's not. It's words we're used to as well. Polite, mercy, sarcastic, dread and love.
Yes. And actually, it was this again was part of the genesis, really, because I did. I'm one of the things that I love doing is bringing back old words from the past that I just, that I find languishing in the corners of the dictionary and think, why on earth did that fall out of use? So I collect those. And I did start with those. But it soon became clear that if you were going to do a dictionary of emotions, then you had to put in the biggies, the ones that we know, like lust and greed and envy, love, as you say. And I was well aware of the fact that I'm not a philosopher and I'm not a historian, but I wanted to focus on the language and how that's evolved over the years, because the language pretty much shines a light on, you know, how we viewed these emotions over the centuries.
And you describe a situation there where you pick up a dictionary and you flick through it and you happen upon that particular word. You happen upon lonesome fret. I mean, that is really what you do, is it? You just kind of flick through the dictionary.
Well, it's not really a physical flicking anymore. It is an online flicking because I've got the OED, the Oxford English Dictionary, online. But there is also a fantastic tool on there, Kieran, which is a historical thesaurus. So if I was to click on envy, for example, I would find all the synonyms throughout history that have been recorded in language for that particular emotion. Or if I was to look up, well, you mentioned love there. There are very, very few synonyms for love. They used to be. It used to be kind of classified in all sorts of different ways, depending on the type of love that we felt, whether it was a parent towards a child or the one we feel towards our partner, or a friend. We used to differentiate, but we don't anymore. And yet love is one of the most powerful words we have. So there were lots of online dictionary tools that I used. And it was just this wonderful adventure, honestly, which just had me going from one word to another as I was following these threads over time.
Where does that fascination with words and the etymology of words and phrases, like, where does that come from for you?
I wish I knew. I love to think of it as a sort of mystical force that I can't really explain, because from very early on, I was drawn to words, often very, very boring ones, you know, from ingredients on a ketchup bottle to shampoo bottles to anything that had the printed word on it, the written word I was drawn to. I don't really understand why. And I, you know, always talk about sitting in the back of the family car as we were going on trips to the seaside or whatever. And my sister would be reading some incredible incredibly thrilling novel. And I would be immersed in French and German vocabulary books because that was my joy. But I can't really explain why. I'm just so lucky that I found it so early.
It's like the as well, the words that we use every day, I think people as well, why these stories and these books and your appearances on Countdown, why they tend to resonate is people are fascinated by the progeny of some words that they don't tend to think about. One of the first words that kids learn in school, in national school in this country, in Irish, is milshan, which is sweets. And the root of it is mil or mel, if you go back to Latin and Greek, and Melissa and the first honeybee who was at Zeus and Hera's wedding.
Oh, I love that. That's absolutely beautiful. And that sweetness, the sweetness of honey and things, you'll find in lots of words as well. Like honeymoon, for example, is, I'm going to go off on one here, Kieran, but honeymoon is actually quite a cynical word because the idea was not that this period is as sweet as honey, but that it kind of, the moon bit is to do with waning. So the sort of sweetness wanes over time, which is really quite sad when you look at it. Yes. But yeah, words like that, as you say, if you start to decode them and unpack them, there are so many surprises. And sometimes they just wear their hearts on their sleeve, only we've changed the pronunciation. So, you know, something like breakfast, for example, if we still pronounced it as break fast, we would understand that we're breaking our overnight fast. Or if we were to talk about secretaries as secretaries, we might guess that they were keepers of secrets originally. So sometimes their origins have become lost because we've changed the picture slightly. But those footprints are still there if you start digging for them.
And I like as well in the book that, I mean, I don't think you'd ever be accused with any of the books of taking yourself too seriously, and it has meh in it, you know, M-E-H or a shrug of the shoulders. And I kind of thought, oh, I wonder what the interesting background to this is. And I find myself reading about The Simpsons.
Yes, always The Simpsons, because they gave us Dole as well, didn't they? Yes, so The Simpsons were the ones that really sort of sent it out there, because Lisa spells it out, I think. She goes M-E-H, because Homer can't get her enthusiastic about going to a theme park. Don't quite know where it comes from. It may be from Yiddish. But what I love also is that if you look in that lovely historical thesaurus that I mentioned, you'll find a centuries old equivalent of meh, that kind of shrug, verbal shrug. It's frobbly mobbly. So if you're feeling a bit frobbly mobbly about something, you're kind of, you know, can take it or leave it. So it's little journeys like that that I adore.
Yeah, listen, we could talk all day about different, but I like vestry because I think lots of people think of sacristy and the sleeping smiles of children. Another,
it's just beautiful. The moment I discovered that, and also I think that one, and also stound, stound being the pang of emotion you feel when you smell a familiar perfume or hear a familiar song. I was so enthralled by the fact that there was actually a word for these things.
That is great, beautiful. Isn't it? Yeah, that's a feeling we all identify with. We didn't have a word for it. And we're talking today, the big news in this country today is a huge change in licensing laws, which means that pubs and clubs will be open an awful lot later. And it's interesting that plubberocht, the Irish word, is in there. Babbling or blubbering, talking while crying. Because immediately, when I read the description, I immediately thought of someone who is possibly over-imbibed and is just letting it all out.
Oh, yes. There's also in one of the old drinkers' dictionaries, you'll also find maudlin drunk as an example of one of the types of drunks that you might find. And it's the one that just kind of gets very soppy, possibly goes around kissing everybody. And just is going to feel the effects the day after.
Well, listen, it's a great book. And I mentioned all the different ways people will know you. I didn't mention actually the word of the day on Twitter as well, which a lot of people love. Your posts and the pointed nature of them sometimes. I mean, that's a kind of a funny one. I mean, how do you walk that line?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Sometimes, obviously, they are riffing off a topical event. So, you know, I think that's probably fairly obvious. But other times, genuinely, they are quite self-referential. And I'm simply describing myself. One that I mentioned, it was that there's a Scots expression, hingham tringham, which means barely presentable or just about hanging together, which is exactly how I felt as I was shuffling around that morning. But then my timeline was suddenly full of pictures of Boris. So that tends to be how it works. But, you know, Our dictionaries are particularly full of insults. We love a good insult. I think we're sort of quite a gossipy lot at heart. And the moment I post an insult, honestly, people begin to apply it to anybody and everyone. I mean, whoever is in their life that they feel is deserving of this particular insult. So it just shows you how versatile language is and how flexible it is. You know, people are just sort of picking them up and then using these words as they wish.
And then on Countdown, I mentioned 30 years. I think Countdown itself celebrates, is it 40 years next week? Been on television. It's remarkable longevity.
I know. It's fantastic. We've had a great time celebrating the 40th. And, you know, I think, honestly, it is all about the format, because most people, I think, have seen Countdown at some point in their lives. And they will know instantly how to play the game after watching one numbers round and one letters round. You just know, and it just draws you in. So, you know, I think thanks to the lovely Marcel Stelman, who brought it over from France, I think the format is what really keeps it going. And that's its, you know, its treasure, really.
Well, as long as you keep going with it, Susie. Listen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Susie Dent is the author of An Emotional Dictionary, Real Words for How You Feel from Angst to Zwotter. Susie, an absolute pleasure. Thanks a million for joining us.
Likewise, Kieran. Thank you so much for having me.
Don't go anywhere. Lots still to come on The Hard Shoulder today, including shortly after 5 o'clock, Minister for Justice Helen McEntee on those aforementioned changes to licensing laws and a few other issues besides. Back in a moment.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.